list, and he was so thrilled. He didn't know what to do for me because it was he was going into a new what he wanted to be, because he didn't know if he had stayed what he would have been assigned to, could have been assigned to the infantry. At any rate, that was a cute, and I was put into headquarters company on detached on what they call it, detached service, so I could be kept in that unit, and I became the chaplain's assistant to Chaplain Estes, to the Protestant chaplain, looking after the needs of the Jewish men till the Jewish chaplain came on board. And it was a very, very interesting experience. As a matter of fact, we used to, a lot of Pittsburgh boys would come through there because they came, I remember Sam Reamer and others would, came, I used to see them coming on the off the boats into our camp, and we had a it was a we had thousands of soldiers at that time, and I would go into Oran usually on the weekend. We would have Friday evening services at camp. During the day there were no services, and I used to go into to the city and would always spend Shabbat with at the synagogue there and at the rabbi's home, and other families were there.
This is when you were still in Oran?
In Oran, yeah. I was there for a year and a half. And I speak French fairly well.
Did you learn here?
Yes, I studied French. And but you don't know anything until you use it, actually. And I spent a year and a half there and made some very, very fast friends. And I'll give you an anecdote. I'll give you, tell you something later that is fascinating, how after almost 50 years I renewed acquaintances. What I wanted to tell you, when we came over on the boat, so this was a British boat called the Empress of Scotland, and Axis Sally at that time was on the radio.
Yeah, I remember.
She used to try to discourage soldiers, and I remember hearing on the radio, we all laughed, "Isn't it too bad, you GIs, you American GIs, the boat Empress of Scotland has just been sunk in the Atlantic." So we were on the high seas at the time. It was very interesting that it was a British boat, and I remember my experience because of the food. Food became to me the most important thing in my life.
Just to survive?
Why? Survival. I mean, I always had enough to eat. I mean, but I never had variety. I remember that on board the ship was a British ship, and for breakfast they gave us kippers. And I remember that I took an extra, I remember it so well, I took an extra portion at the time for breakfast every morning, because at lunch I would keep, we slept in hammocks on the boat, and at lunch I would have the kippers with bread. That was my lunch. But it was, later on it became it was the most important thing in my existence, because I was deprived of so much good food that I made it embarrassing as it is, as I read some of my letters, every letter, what I ate, what I did.
A real Jewish boy.
Yeah, it was a very very interesting.
We like to eat too.
Good, eat well.
When you were talking about the. The yellow badges about to be given to the Jews of Algeria, and this was 43-44.
Yeah.
Did you know what was going on to
yeah,
the Jews
when,
in
when
Europe?
Yeah, we came. No, oh, yeah, we knew. Sure.
What
we knew.
What did you know?
Sure, we knew that. We knew the concentration. It was already known. 43 was known already about the concentration camps and about the war was still going on in Europe. In 44, we knew already. I mean, I think the camps were liberated around that time. We knew already the tsarists that were happening. But I had many good friends in the. See, many of the people from France came back to their origins. They were indigene. They were born in North Africa, mm-hmm. which was French. That Oran at that time was Algeria, was French. They came back to their homes.
Well, they escaped. Algeria didn't even become independent to what, 1960?
When Ben Bella made the, mm-hmm. and then all Jews left there. They, mm-hmm. they escaped. But there were French colonials who were very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, we used to visit with a family in Mostaganem. Mostaganem is on the shore of the Mediterranean, in the department of Oran was like the state of Oran, or the borough of Oran. It was township. I don't know what the English was. It's called Département d'Oran, the state of Oran. Staganem was at the shore, and I had a very dear friend there, whose nephew I helped considerably after the war. His name was Paul Monsonego. Paul Monsonego was a very wealthy farmer. He had tremendous, I have pictures of him if you want to show you, interesting for you to see. He owned date farms in Biskra. He had calves, wineries in Bordeaux and everywhere. I mean, he was a very wealthy man. He was one of the five people who formed the resistance in that area. When General Mark Clark came across before the Americans came to North Africa, before the invasion, Mark Clark came across incognito and landed at Mostaganem. It was a little inlet in the Mediterranean. And there were five people who met Clark. And the legend goes that Clark swam in. He lost his pants on the way. He swam into Mostaganem. And at Paul Monsonego's home, which was, he was a very observant Jew, kept a kosher home. His mother lived there, an old woman. I have pictures of all these people. Harry Hopkins, Roosevelt's man, stayed at his house. Patton. He stayed at their home. Elliot Roosevelt stayed at their home. He was the conduit to allow these people. And he used to tell me, we used to go there. There was a station hospital, an army hospital. So we used to go there to visit the soldiers. And he used to tell me, les Américains sont des braves garçons. They were good kids. Every one of them, they slept, he gave them a bedroom. Everyone used to take a little souvenir, a perfume atomizer or something they would take from his home. But he was very, very important in that community. And his son-in-law, a nephew, was René Rubash, who was in French referred to as ancien bâtonnier. He was a lawyer, very, very distinguished lawyer. And I was able, after the war, to help him come to America to the first World Jewish Congress after the war. It was held in Atlantic City. And I helped him through the army channels to get a passport to get a visa to go to America, only on a visit. He went with his wife, and I remember he came back, he bought her a mink coat. They were very wealthy people. And he represented the French, the Oran community at the World Jewish Congress at the time of Stephen Wise was the president. And this was a fascinating experience because the North African Jews were very observant people. Shuls were packed on Shabbat. So you go to a bris, it was beautiful. I mean, it was really a burgeoning Jewish community. And the synagogue there, and I can see it now, it's right on Boulevard Marshal Joffre. It was patterned after the synagogue in Bordeaux, a very beautiful structure. And I had many friends where I would spend Shabbat with the Benishus and the Toledanos and other families that I became very friendly with. And he's corresponded with him for a long time, but then somehow or other we just went off into space.
Were any of the Europeans able to escape there?
No. Europeans didn't come there. Only French citizens were allowed to come there. And these people came because they had their homes there. And they were able to set up their livelihood again. Many of them, I remember a man by the name of Marcel Amar. Marcel Amar was a membre de consistoire, the Jewish Senate in France. And he used to tell me, he was very proud of it. I used to spend Shabbos in his home. He would tell me that in the great synagogue in Paris, moi, je suis ici, I'm here. Baron Rothschild, right here.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he was a very interesting person. How you remember little things. How grateful he was to me. I used to go there on Shabbat. His wife was a Russian woman, who was his second wife, and they got married in France, in Paris. She spoke Yiddish. These people did not speak Yiddish. They don't speak Yiddish at all. The old timers would speak Ladino among themselves, but the rest of them only spoke French, and no Hebrew either, except the rabbi and other people. The education system was not the greatest, but they were very observant people because, you know, the pattern that's set by non-Jews is followed by Jews. There's a Yiddish expression. Same way the Christians, and we see this in America today, we pattern ourselves a lot after the Christian community. The Arab community is a very, very superstitious kind of a community. I mean, it would be nothing wrong to see at the time the muezzin would call for prayer in the middle of the afternoon, all the Arabs would fall down in the gutter, in the dirt, or wherever it was, to pray. Mm-hmm. And Jews were very, became, I would say there was a certain aura of superstition among them. But these Jews were extremely observant, well-trained by a strong family spirit. But I started to tell you about the Marcel Amar. We were plagued with flies there. It was a warm climate. Flies galore. We would sit down.
Warm climate. He needed the mink coat for his wife.
They get a winter too. But we'd sit down at Marcel Amar's table on Shabbos afternoon. The flies, and she would make gefilte fish for me. You know, she was. Her son had been in it. Was in the French army, and I guess I was in loco. So she did everything. She was wonderful to me. A Russian woman. I have pictures of them. So. One day I came, middle of the week, and I said, Marcel, j'ai un cadeau pour vous. I got a present for you. What did I bring him? You know, remember those fly strips?
Sure.
Because in the army we had the same sorrow. Uh-huh. So I got several of those fly strips, and he was so proud, he hung them on the chandelier right over the table. Well, never forget that.
Yeah.
And the flies would gather while we were eating lunch. But at any rate, this was a wonderful community and made life much more comfortable for me all the way.
Sure.
Because at their homes, I would have chicken and eat and parties. And
must be wonderful to be in a strange country and yet you have the Jewish atmosphere.
Well, you find no matter where you go. I spent a year and a half in Italy afterwards. No matter where you go, where there are Jews, you find a warm. I was in Cairo. I was in Benghazi. I was all in that whole area. No matter where you go, you found Jews, and Jews have an affinity for one another, who help each other,
right.
And have a wholesome respect. A wholesome respect for I found, for example, and I didn't. I made no bones about the fact that I some homes I wouldn't eat. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I wouldn't eat a meal like the meat or something like that.
Not kosher.
I tried wherever possible. It was impossible to observe that in the army under field conditions. But under the circumstances, and I was very friendly. After I was in the chaplain section, I used to meet a lot of people. The officers would come to services, doctors, you know. And one of the doctors, I remember his name was Herzog. He was from Iowa. I asked him, what should I do? He says, take a vitamin pill every day. Don't worry about it. He says, you'll be all right. And I used to, I had no ill effects, and I felt good. And I had one thing that most soldiers didn't have, and sometimes officers didn't have, and that was freedom. I was able to, any place I went, I was in line of duty. I had a regular pass. For a long time, I had my own vehicle, my own Jeep, because the Jeep was assigned to the Jewish chaplain's office, and there was no Jewish chaplain. So that, and I was attached to this Protestant chaplain who never let me go. I was his good luck charm. I used to write part of his speeches. I would prepare his reports. He went from first lieutenant to major.
And you were still a private?
I became a corporal. He never let me go.
Isn't that funny?
Nice.
And he was very good to me. And I used to help him. So usually the Protestant chaplain's assistant has to be an organist, you know, because they have the organist. So he used to get some replacement to come in and spend some time playing the organ. But he was very, very nice to me, and I have a warm recollection of his attention and a wholesome respect for Jewish things. And even though he was a Southern Baptist, which is sometimes difficult to get across, I don't know what he felt in his heart, but his demeanor to me was beyond. And any time I needed anything for a Jewish soldier or anything, he would just sign. He says, write it and I'll sign it. He was very good. And I had many, many interesting experiences. I mentioned before that I had a reunion. When we were in Israel 2 years ago,
which would have been about 1990.
No, maybe before that.
Do you remember the date? What was the date that you said, and I didn't get it here?
Of what?
When you were aware, you became aware of Jews in concentration camps.
I think it was in 44.
Were you still in the army?
Still in Iran.
In Iran?
I was still 46.
Wow.
In Iran.
That's when I got out.
We were in Israel. We came back. I've told this story a number of times. It's a fascinating thing. We were in Iran, and I was, let me put it this way. I was very close to a family, Madame Judith Toledano, whose home I was almost like it. She used to call me. She used to write to my parents, as my North African mother. She was a woman in her 70s, a very wealthy woman, the kind of woman that on Thursdays would send the concierge out with money to give to the poor people.
What was her name?
Judith Toledano. No, it's not necessarily.
Poliano.
Toledano. Toledano. It's a very famous Spanish name, Spanish family. She came originally from Tetuan, from Tangiers. And the family, in her home, she showed me handwritten letters by Moses Montefiore to her family, to her grandfather probably. When Moses Montefiore used to come from Spain to Palestine, he would travel, and he had a whole entourage, and he...
What year would that have been?
I don't know. Moses Montefiore lived many, many years. I don't know. I don't know when he lived. I don't have a date in my mind. But at any rate, I was tempted. I didn't think of it at the time. She would have given me those letters. I don't know where they are now. They're probably lost. But at any rate, she was wonderful to me. And As a matter of fact, I'm diverting from the original story, but during the war, Dr. Barnett Brickner, Dr. Brickner came to Oran as the messenger, as the emissary of Franklin Roosevelt, President Roosevelt.
Is this Balfour's father?
Yeah, Balfour's father, Barnett Brickner, who represented the Jewish represented the Jewish Welfare Board to inspect, see what was happening with Jewish boys. Bishop Oxnam came for the Protestants, Brickner came. So we had a party for him. And I remember we had a special ceremony at the synagogue, of course, but Judith Madame Toledano made a party in her home. And I have a picture of the table that she set. One of the finest. She had lovely china and lace. And she was a very wealthy person and was kept a very kosher home. And in her home, I would spend Shabbat in her home many, many times. So when we were in Paris, when we came by TWA, we had a stop in Paris, and we were going to go to London in Paris. We're waiting to change planes. I have to go back. When we were in Jerusalem, there is a man there named Manitou Ashkenazi. Manitou Ashkenazi is probably the best way I can explain it. He's the guru of the Sephardim. He's a brilliant scholar whose father was the chief rabbi of Oran. His name was Ashkenazi, and I have pictures of him. He wore, again, as it was Christelzach, as a Yiddelzach. The French abbe wore a round hat, a turned collar, and a cassock.
He wore that.
That's the way he dressed. And he was a very, he wrote several books. And I knew his daughter, and I knew Manitou. He was a little boy then. But his daughter was very active in organizing, like you would refer to as the Young Judea here, Jewish kids. And I used to get them stuff from the army, candy and things like that. And so I knew them very well. And when we came to Israel, I said, Manitou Ashkenazi is here. I'm going to call him. I called him up on the phone, and I said, you don't remember me, I'm sure. I told him where I was in Kennesaw. He said, no, he doesn't remember. I said to him, where are all of our friends from North Africa, from Oran, the Ben Ishus, the Ben Saduns, the Ben Gigi, Toledanos, where are they? He says, well, most of them went to Israel. Many went to France. Many went to Marseille, which was like the Miami Beach for Oran. That's where they had summer homes there. And many went to Paris. So I came to the Paris airport. I said to Chantzi, you know, there must be somebody here I know. So I said, I inquire for leaving the telephone. Where's the telephone book? A post office. Here you got a telephone book at every drugstore.
Yeah.
Airport. I had to go to the post office. The Paris telephone directory is, I think, 3 volumes, if I remember correctly. I look up. First name came to my mind was Toledano. I look up Toledano, and I remember that Madame Toledano's son had been killed in the French army, and that may have been the reason that she was so warm to me. I don't know, because they're the same age. He was married to a woman called Judith Toledano. And they had a son, Philippe. So I look in the phone book, and I see there are about 15 Toledanos. It's a very famous Spanish name, from Toledo, from Spain. I look and I see Philippe Toledano. I said to Patsy, I'm going to call this guy. A big sport, I am, 10 francs and the telephone, and we're in the airport. I call, and I speak in French. I said, vous me rappelez, you won't remember me. Mais j'étais à Oran pendant la guerre, during the war. And I remember, and I'm looking for, je cherche un Philippe Toledano qui était né à Oran, that had been born in Oran, in Afrique du Nord. Oran. Silence. I said, Il habite avec sa grand-mère. He lived with his grandmother and his mother at 21 Boulevard Marchand Joffre in Oran. I get a chill when I tell him. Mm-hmm. He says, c'est moi.
Oh, wow.
This was him.
Wow.
He says, I says, I have a picture of you, and I'll show it to you. I was holding you in my arms on your mother's balcony, on your grandmother's balcony.
Wow.
He says, I'm an old guy, and I'm 50 years old. He was 5 years old at that time. I'm going to show you the picture.
Holy smokes.
Had he lived in France for a long time? No.
He's a film director in Venezuela. Happened to be in Paris visiting with his mother. It was around Christmas time, around the holidays. And he happened to be visiting with her. And this is me with Stanley Goldman, that fellow I was telling you about. He happened to be there visiting with his mother. And, you know, I didn't want to ask whether she was alive because she's probably well into her 70s by now. Mm-hmm. I said, there's a French expression, elle est encore, she is yet, you know. Mm. So he says, wait, elle est ici. And the phone clicks off.
Oh, the money ran out.
Yeah, they don't tell you to put another dime
right.
in. So I... what's 10 francs? So I put another 10 francs. I get him back, and I said, now, if it get cut off again, we spoke in French, I said, if it get cut off again, this is my number. Call me back. So I should come to his home. I said, we got cut off. By the time that I called the second time, he told his mother, and Hélène was his mother. And she remembered. I called back and I talked to her. Oh, you must come to visit the Viva. I said, I can't. We're on bond in the airport, and you had to have a visa at that time to go into the city. Now you don't have to have it. This is Marcel Amman. Said I couldn't go in. At any rate, I talked to him. Then I got cut off again. So I waited. I guess he can't call into the payphone. So I called again. And meanwhile, they were calling our plane for London. So I gave my number. I said, next time you come to America, be in touch and so forth. And from the time that after the second call, Hélène, his mother, showed him the picture of me holding him in the.
And she knew where it was at that also.
Oh yeah, she probably had it in an album or something. But it was a fascinating experience to have had the occasion to talk to somebody like that. Here, this is Philip, me holding Philip Tobiano. Imagine that. It's on the balcony of his mother's home.
What a story.
This is a picture of me. This is an Army secret picture. This was taken, I was blowing shofar, conducting the services for the Army. This is General James, who was the commanding general. This is in Canciano's farm. You know, Canciano was Mussolini's son-in-law. Mm-hmm. And this is not far from Caserta in the Volturno Valley. That we took an old barn. It was all bombed out. These are sheets. It was filthy. Set up the sheets.
Wow.
And that's me blowing the shofar. It explains it on the back.
And Mussolini's son-in-law came?
No. He was already out. The Italians were all... That was the band. The American Army took over that property.
Oh, you mean this was his home?
This was the barn and his farm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ciano's farm. And
wow.
It was this was I have any number of very valuable pictures. At any rate,
you need someone to organize that. it looks like mine.
I don't. There's some letters that I used to write a lot of.
And you wrote in Hebrew.
Hebrew, Yiddish. Yeah. I used to write. This was a tribute that I wrote to about Jake Hockman after he died. I wrote a tribute for the Boston paper. This was I could go into any number of anecdotes about the things in Iran, and there was a wonderful, wonderful Jewish community. And I remember I mentioned to you about Paul Montenegro. There's a picture of them. These were all the kids in Iran. This was
were they an ally of ours then?
French.
Iran?
Sure.
The French.
No.
Yeah.
Not Iran.
Oh, I got you.
Oran was in Algeria. These are families.
I've been writing Iran.
This was Philippe's mother.
I see.
Oh, wow.
And there he is.
Yeah. All right, so you came back to the United States in 1946.
Yeah, I went from North Africa to Italy.
Okay.
For a year and a half. I was at Rome Area Command. And, that was a fascinating experience. Our offices were in Piazza Venezia. Have you been to Rome?
Mm-hmm.
Piazza.
Yeah.
You ever been to Rome? You know where Piazza Venezia is? Where Mussolini's balcony is, and the Victoria Emanuel Monument? My office is right across from Mussolini's balcony. Anyway, there was a strong Jewish community there. A lot of people, they used to come down from the camps, and they would come to Rome.